The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Religion News Service, News and Observer, and U.S. News and World Report. Our first piece was published by the Associated Press on January 14 and written by Nicole Winfield. Pope Francis is introspective and self-critical in his autobiography, at least about his youth. Rome. An introspective Pope Francis has divulged some of the behind-the-scenes dynamics of the secret 2013 conclave that elected him Pope, and the resistance he has encountered ever since. In his autobiography, released on January 14, that also doubles down on some of his more controversial decisions as pontiff. Hope, the autobiography, was only supposed to be published after Francis' death, but at his own request, the book is hitting bookshelves now in more than 80 countries to coincide with the start of the Church's Holy Year. Its publishers say it's the first autobiography ever written by a sitting pope, though Francis has collaborated with plenty of other memoir-type books before, and much of his papacy and personal backstory are already well known. But Hope does provide personal insights into how history's first Latin American pope interprets his childhood in Buenos Aires and how it has informed his priorities as pope. Drawn from conversations over 6 years with Italian journalist Carlo Musa, Hope offers Francis' own sometimes unflattering assessments of decisions he made or things he regrets, at least before he became pope. It's almost confessional at times, an 88-year-old Jesuit performing the Ignatian examination of his conscience at the end of his life, to identify things he said or did that he now realizes could have been done better. Whether it's the time when he insisted that a schoolmate pay to repair a bike he had broken, or knocked another schoolmate nearly unconscious, he seems deeply ashamed of his younger self and says he still doesn't believe himself worthy of the papacy. If I consider what is the greatest gift that I desire from the Lord and have experienced, it is the gift of shame, he writes at one point. Curiously, two periods of Bergoglio's past, which have remained somewhat mysterious to outsiders, are once again avoided in Hope. One concerns a stint in Cordoba, Argentina, from 1990 to 92. Francis has never really explained the internal Jesuit dynamics that resulted in him being exiled to work as a confessor at the Jesuit church more than a decade after he was provincial of the order in Argentina. The period is mentioned only in passing when Francis refers simply to the dark night at Cordoba. The other period of unknown in Bergoglio's backstory concerns the time he spent in Germany doing research on the theologian Romano Guardini for a dissertation he never finished. Also given short shrift was the impact of the clergy sexual abuse scandal, which convulsed his papacy for several years. The scandal exploded during Francis's 2018 trip to Chile, and the Pope mentions the scandal briefly in the book. But he spends far more time recalling a more heartwarming memory from the Chile trip, when he married a pair of flight attendants on board the papal plane during the flight to Aquia. The second half of the book, focusing on the papacy, is far less critical and, in fact, is strident in defending his somewhat controversial decisions. It is here that Francis provides further detail of his emotions as the votes started going his way on the second day of balloting during the March 2013 conclave that elected him pope. Francis reveals that he was among those cardinals receiving stopgap votes in the first rounds, when cardinals toss out votes to see which way the balloting winds are heading. He says he wasn't keeping count in the early rounds, but realized that his fate was sealed once he got 69 votes on the fourth ballot out of the 77 needed for a two-thirds majority of the 115 cardinals. The fifth ballot, the one that made him pope, actually had to be done twice. An extra ballot paper got stuck to one that a cardinal had filled out, so that when the papers were counted, there were 116 rather than 115. The papers were burned without having ever been opened, and a new fifth ballot called. When my name was pronounced for the 77th time, there was a burst of applause while the reading of the votes went on, he writes. I don't know exactly how many votes there were in the end. I was no longer listening. The noise covered the voice of the scrutineer. One of the first things he did after the vote was to embrace Cardinal Angelo Scola, the Archbishop of Milan, who had been a second favorite going into the conclave that the Italian Bishops' Conference had dummied up a press release announcing his election. He deserved that embrace, Francis writes. Once in the sacristy, known as the Room of Tears, to be outfitted with the papal garb, Francis reveals that he had in his pocket his old Episcopal ring, which he used, suggesting that he had an intuition getting dressed in the morning that he would indeed be elected pope. The red shoes? No, I have orthopedic shoes. I'm rather flat-footed, he writes of his sartorial choices that night. Nor did he want the red velvet cape, known as a mozzetta, favored by his predecessor. They were not for me. 2 days later, they told me I would have to change my trousers, wear white ones. That made me laugh. I didn't want to be an ice cream seller, I said, and I kept my own. Those looking for current Vatican gossip, in hope, will be somewhat disappointed, as Francis only fleetingly touches on the more controversial parts of his papacy. He is far more certain of his decisions made as pope, even doubling down on blasting traditionalist Catholic priests as rigid and mentally unstable. This rigidity is often accompanied by elegant and costly tailoring, lace, fancy trimmings, rochets, not a taste for tradition, but clerical ostentation, he writes. These ways of dressing up sometimes conceal mental imbalance, emotional deviation, behavioral difficulties, a personal problem that may be exploited. He writes that the reform of the Vatican bureaucracy, particularly the effort to impose international accounting and budgeting standards on its finances, have been the most difficult task of his papacy, and one that generated the greatest resistance to change. I have been summoned to a battle, he writes. He strongly defends his decision to authorize a sweeping trial of 10 people, including a cardinal, accused of alleged financial misconduct related to an investment in a London property. The trial resulted in several convictions, but also cost the Holy See reputational harm, given questions about whether the defendants received a fair trial, and Francis' own role in the saga. The decisions that I made in that respect were not easy. I was sure there would be problems, but I also know that the truth must never be hidden, and being opaque is always the worst choice, he writes. After African bishops unanimously rejected his approval of gay blessings, Francis stands by that decision and insists that the blessing is for the people, not the relationship. Homosexuality is not a crime, he writes, repeating a statement he first made in a 2023 interview with the Associated Press. Now an article about North Carolina published by the News and Observer on January 19, written by Joe Marisak. Former pastor stole large amounts of cash intended for Helene Relief, North Carolina sheriff says. A former pastor in the North Carolina mountains is accused of stealing large amounts of cash donations from church members and the community that were intended for Hurricane Helene relief, a sheriff said on Friday. Jeffrey Brian Merrow, a 60-year-old Marion resident, was taken into custody on January 5 on charges of embezzlement and larceny, both felonies, McDowell County Sheriff Ricky Buchanan said. Merrow was freed on $5,000 secured bond. On October 28, Sheriff's Deputy Alicia Lund spoke with members of Garden Creek Baptist Church about claims of embezzlement, fraud, and theft, according to a sheriff's office statement. Merrow was pastor of the church at the time, sheriff's officials said. Church members showed numerous receipts to Lund for items that were never purchased and services that were never performed, all paid for with church money. One receipt was for a claim to a local insurance company for items that were never stolen, according to the statement. Church members also reported that cash given to Merrow for Helene relief never went to its intended use. Sheriff's officials haven't disclosed the amount of money they believe was stolen. And community donated items for Helene relief were reported stolen, including generators, chainsaws, and heaters. Merrow is on supervised probation for obtaining property by false pretense greater than $100,000. That incident is unrelated to the latest charges, officials said. Merrow did not immediately respond to a phone message from the Charlotte Observer on Saturday. Now a piece from the Religion News Service, published on January 16 and written by Adele Banks. National Baptist new president Boies Kimber seeks to include women and young leaders. The Reverend Boies Kimber was officially installed as president of the National Baptist Convention, USA, Incorporated, during the winter board meeting of the predominantly black denomination, which he hopes will become more inclusive of women and young leaders. NBC USA members and guests fill the 2,000-seat sanctuary of the historic 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, for a three-hour service on January 13. Some 500 people plan to attend a sold-out inauguration ball. Kimber, pastor of a New Haven, Connecticut church, was greeted by officers of other black Christian organizations, including the Lot Carey Foreign Mission Convention, the Conference of National Black Churches, and Full Gospel Baptist Fellowship, before he was installed into his new role by his predecessor, the Reverend Jerry Young. Young reminded his successor of the importance of having a spiritual life as a leader. "You can't lead black Baptists without orders from Jehovah," Young, who concluded 2 5-year terms, advised his successor. "That's all I've got to say. Just spend your time with God." The installation service was held in the church that over 60 years ago was bombed by members of the Ku Klux Klan, resulting in the deaths of 4 girls readying for a Sunday church service. Kimber, 65, also chose the church as the location for his 2023 announcement to run for the top role of his denomination. My main goal now is, one, to restore our headquarters in Nashville, Tennessee. 2, to focus on Christian education, which our convention was founded upon. Kimber, the former president of the Connecticut State Missionary Baptist Convention, said in an interview hours before his installation. 3 is to have a better and a greater relationship with our young people of our convention. 4 is to have women to become a part of administrative parts of the convention. Baptists gathered at the Birmingham Jefferson Convention Complex for sessions to handle denominational business and participate in worship services, and planned to conclude the gatherings with a mental health workshop on trauma-informed ministry. Kimber was elected in September in a contentious election process, where he was the sole candidate on the ballot after officials determined the Connecticut pastor had received the necessary 100 endorsements from member churches and other NBC USA entities to qualify to run for president. He won 69% of the vote at the NBC USA's annual session in Baltimore, with 31% voting no. The Reverend Alvin Love, a Chicago-area pastor and one of the four other ministers who had wanted to be on the ballot, said his concern was with the election process and not Kimber. "He's a good guy. I have no issue with him," said Love, joining others in welcoming Kimber's emphasis on including younger and newer pastors and women leaders in positions in his administration. "I don't know if it's moving as fast as it should or is going as high as it ought," said Love, who would have liked to have seen a woman named vice president. "But he's doing much more than anybody before him ever did in that area." Asked about the lack of female vice presidents in the NBC USA, Kimber responded in the interview, "We will get to that. We're making steps. We're making progress. And so we will continue to work toward that goal." The Reverend A. Michael Charles Durant, 64, the new chairman of the NBC USA Board of Directors, said there's been an expansion in women's leadership roles. "In the past, there were areas of concentration, say, in Christian Ed, the women's auxiliary missions, but this will be far broader," he said. During the installation service, the Reverend Valerie Thompson, pastor of a Columbus, Georgia church, and a new member of the NBC USA Executive Committee, said a prayer. And the Reverend Nicole Guns, one of several people appointed as assistant secretary, introduced the NBC USA officers as they processed into the church. The Reverend Chevelle T. Kimber, co-pastor of First Calvary Baptist Church in New Haven, sat next to her husband, the new president, not far from the pulpit, where speakers took turns congratulating him. Guns said in an earlier interview that she was enthusiastic about being part of Kimber's cabinet, along with other millennials. "In the Black Baptist Church, you can be 60 years old and considered young," said Guns, who was one of the preachers at a young adult revival held at the Birmingham church. The Reverend Christopher Davis, the new NBC USA General Secretary, said under Kimber's leadership, there are deliberate efforts to give younger clergy spaces to preach on the main stage of NBC USA meetings or teach in its workshops and classes. "In a few years, they will ultimately transition into leadership as some of those who've been around for a while begin to age out," said Davis, 52. "If you're not intentional about creating space for them, then what incentive do they have to stay? And if they all leave, then there's no one to lead the work after we've passed off the scene." Before choosing people for his administration and NBC USA committees, Kimber has issued a statement marking the death of former President Jimmy Carter, whom he cited as an example of living one's faith through action, and announced that the NBC USA would be sending 10 truckloads of supplies to aid in the recovery efforts, a small but meaningful step to bring comfort and support to those in need after the wildfires in California. On the day of the installation, Kimber announced that he had created an economic development committee to meet with politicians and major corporations that have been rolling back their initiatives to address diversity, equity, and inclusion. "Many of our people buy from Walmart, Target, McDonald's, and so those people certainly would have to come to the table to talk about the diversity and talk about the inclusion of blacks in their business," he said in the interview. The committee will be led by Chicago philanthropist and businessman Willie Wilson, who began at McDonald's as a custodian and later became a franchisee of the fast food restaurant. Kimber signed a memorandum of understanding with Gamaliel National Network to support the NBC USA's work on social justice. Kimber said he was pleased to see the range of people in the halls of the convention center as the midwinter gathering began its four-day series of meetings. He said the denomination is still recovering from the heights of the COVID-19 pandemic, which really hurt the American fiber of business and religious institutions, leading to losses in membership. We are rebuilding what we've lost and bringing people back to our denomination and to our local churches, he said, as he headed to his next meeting. A lot of young people and pastors are here, and we're excited. A lot of women are here. A lot of seniors are here. There's a variety of people here at our board meetings. Now a piece published by the Associated Press on January 17, written by Maria Teresa Hernandez. Blessings for dogs? Bring them to Mexico City's cathedral, and St. Anthony will do the rest. Mexico City. Behaving at their best, a dozen dogs attended Mass at Mexico City's cathedral on Friday, waiting for their turn to be doused with holy water. The blessing of the animals is a long-time Catholic tradition celebrated on January 17. On this day, Mexican Catholic congregations and priests welcome pups, cats, and the occasional parrot on the feast day of St. Anthony the Abbot, considered the patron saint of animals. A few parishioners dress up their beloved pets with sweaters or scarves, but all pray to God and their four-legged friend's patron to keep them healthy and safe. Carla Flores feels as if Lana, her 11-year-old dog, was a genuine blessing. Someone abandoned her as a newborn outside her home on December 12, when millions of Mexican Catholics celebrate Our Lady of Guadalupe. We found her next to her mom and little brothers inside a box, Flores said. We rescued them and gave up most of them for adoption, but we kept her and her mom. Recently, Lana has been depressed and sick, Flores said, so a blessing felt in order. Rocky, a black poodle-looking dog, came with his owner, Nadalyn Aguilar. He was a gift from her mother during the pandemic, she said, and will forever feel grateful for the joy he's brought into her life. We have faced tough situations, Aguilar said, but he's been like a light for us during the storms we have endured, and this will be his fifth year as part of our family. The Reverend Jose Antonio Carbajal, rector of the cathedral, addressed the pets waiting attentively and calmly in their owner's arms during a service. We ask the Lord to bless them so he can preserve them and care for them, since they bring company and encouragement to their caretakers, he said. As soon as he finished noon Mass, pet owners headed to the cathedral's entrance, where Caballo sprinkled holy water on both humans and pets. There was Jerome, a black and tan colored Yorkie, held by loving owner Gabriela Vaquez. She adopted him 4 years ago as a pup and immediately fell head over heels for him. Since then, on the anniversary of the day he arrived home, she gets a cake and hosts a party to celebrate Jerome. I once spoke to a person who can talk to animals, and she told me that he was a gift for someone, but was later abandoned and beaten. So he carried a lot of trauma, Vaquez said. We are now very happy together, and it was fortunate to have found each other. Now from the Associated Press, an article written and published on January 16. Bejeweled crown stolen from Virgin Mary statue at Philadelphia Church. Philadelphia. A man broke into a Philadelphia church and stole a 125-year-old bejeweled crown from atop a marble statue of the Virgin Mary city police said on January 13. The burglary at St. John the Evangelist Roman Catholic Church occurred around 1:10 a.m. when the thief smashed through a stained glass window, police said. The break-in was captured on surveillance video that police released on January 13. The man then climbed into the upper nave of the church and went straight to the statue and crown, the church's archivist Ann Kirkwood told the Philadelphia Inquirer. While church staff members were preparing for a baptism on January 14, they found broken glass and soon noticed that the crown was missing, which a church history from the 1950s indicated was created by James E. Caldwell and Company around 1900. It was made from jewelry and gems donated by parishioners to celebrate the church's reopening after a fire in 1899. Kirkwood said that in 2015, when the crown was briefly removed from the statue and examined, she noted its maker's inscription was J.E. Caldwell and Company. The damaged stained glass window also dates to the church's reopening in 1902 and was fashioned in Munich, Germany. And last of all, a brief piece from the U.S. News and World Report, published on January 4. Pope Francis says bullying at school prepares students for war, not peace. Speaking to about 2,000 Italian teachers, educators, and parents, Francis stressed his message against bullying, asking the audience to pledge to fight against it, both at school and at home. The pontiff praised educational efforts at schools to promote peace, noting that imagining peace lays the foundations for a more just and fraternal world through every subject taught and through the creativity of children and young people. But if at school, he said, you wage war among yourselves or engage in bullying, you are preparing for war, not for peace, he said. The Pope also called for more dialogue within families, emphasizing that it is dialogue that makes us grow. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you will listen again next time. I am Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.